What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. Corey, how are we doing?
Feeling good. It's weird not to see your face, or for the listeners not to see my face, since we've been going live all the time, but we're back to the basics.
Yeah, back to the basic classic podcast right here, which you can find on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and coming soon, Spotify. But Corey, NBA action continues. Like, we still got Summer League. There's news coming out. You know, we talked Paul George and Kawhi last time we were on here, Russell Westbrook trade stuff. So there's plenty to dive in still. What do you want to start with?
I say we start with the Westbrook stuff, right? I mean, this is the biggest star now available on the market.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, and it's like a somewhat of a bad time to request a trade. We kind of touched on the last show, but, you know, now nobody has cap space. There's a different couple options. You know, ESPN dropped something today where they looked at five possible trade scenarios for Russell Westbrook. They have the Suns, the Pistons, the Heat, the Timberwolves, and the Bulls. We'll start with the Suns. The Suns would get Russell Westbrook. The Thunder would get Tyler Johnson, Kelly Oubre Jr. via sign and trade, Aaron Baines, a 2022 first-round pick, and it lottery protected and otherwise would convert into 2 second-round picks. What do you think of that trade?
I don't think it's terrible for the Thunder because you get two young prospects in Tyler Johnson and Kelly Oubre. The Johnson money is, it's not a good contract, which is what locked him up long-term with Miami originally. Thank you, Brooklyn, for giving him the offer sheet. But you get more draft picks, which I think is solid. And I think if you're getting Aaron Baines, it also probably frees up the door to possibly move Steven Adams as well in a different deal. So I don't hate this. And if you're the Suns, you become more relevant, right? You got a top-notch point guard alongside Devin Booker. They can really push the tempo. Ayton, as we know, is a more offensive-minded center. So I don't hate it. But again, I mean, if you're the Suns, what does this really do for you? It just makes you a little bit more relevant. I mean, you're not competing for anything.
Exactly. I think if the Suns wanted to make a splash and be relevant, yeah, it makes sense. But all it does is really just make you a somewhat relevant team for the next couple of years. Because we talked about it, you know, Russell Westbrook's health is a concern. His contract is a concern. Tyler Johnson for the Thunder side is expiring, so that's nice. Kelly Oubre Jr. had a really nice season last year. Obviously, you mentioned Aaron Baines, solid center. And then draft capital, you know, you would hope that you'd get the 2022 first-round pick. But there's no guarantee you'd get it because it's lottery protected. And it's not like Russell Westbrook going to the Suns guarantees they're going to even be a playoff team. So it would really just be 2 second-round picks. The real question is, like, can you get a first-round pick for Russell Westbrook that's not super late? Because I don't know if you can.
I would think not. Because also, yeah, I think the Thunder are going to be trying to give Westbrook the ideal destination for him. And any of those ideal destinations likely aren't going to have a good draft pick situation.
Yeah, so it's like, I think if they do end up with a first-round pick, it's a first-round pick that's probably like 20 to 30. You know, obviously lottery protected, but like I said, I don't think the Suns would be a lock for the playoffs if they got Westbrook. So I don't think that trade really does anything for either squad. I think if anything, it may be better for the Thunder because I like Oubre Jr. I thought he played really well. But on to the next one, the Pistons. They would get Russell Westbrook. The Thunder would get Reggie Jackson back. Lance and Galloway, Tony Snell, a 2020 unprotected first-round pick, and then a pick swap in 2021 and a 2022 unprotected first-round pick.
I mean, this is a solid deal for the Thunder. Ironic that you're getting Reggie Jackson back. and he's expiring, I believe, right?
I could double-check that.
I think he's expiring. So if he is expiring, it's a solid deal because Galloway, Snell, fill-ins, but you're getting 3 draft picks, which is crucial. And then if you're the Pistons, you're already cap struck. You're locked in with Drummond and Griffin. But at least now you throw in Westbrook. Westbrook is probably the ideal point guard for those two guys. I mean, at least Drummond with the dish offs. Blake Griffin gets another guy to pair with. And it makes the Pistons a middle of the pack team in the East, probably a little bit more competitive. Maybe a team you don't necessarily want to face if Westbrook's on. But I mean, again, it's one of those situations where the Pistons would be even more cap struck with those three guys. And what's the rest of the roster going to look like? Probably not a lot of shooters, which is already their issue.
Exactly. And I think that's what the problem is. Reggie Jackson is expiring, like you mentioned. Galloway's expiring. Tony Snell still has $12 million left on a player option for next year. Then you bring in Westbrook if you're the Pistons, and now you're stuck in that cap situation because Drummond's getting big money. Blake's getting big money. I think for the Thunder side, the picks are great, like you mentioned. You know, you're getting 2 first-round picks. And I don't think they're going to be incredibly great, but they're not going to be as terrible as, you know, if you were to trade with a better team. So I'm not really liking it for the Pistons side. I think from the Thunder side, it's pretty good because you're getting cap relief and you're getting the picks. But from the Pistons side, I think it's a possible good fit. But then I also look at it. I think Blake's the best when he has the ball in his hands a lot, like we saw last year. And I'm not sure if it's great for him and Westbrook to kind of coexist. And like you said, the shooters aren't there. And I think both of us would agree that shooters is what Westbrook needs and probably what Blake and Andre Drummond need too.
Yeah, I think actually the only way this makes more sense for Detroit is from the business aspect of they're in this new arena for the last couple of years. That place has an issue with attendance and selling out. Mm-hmm. If you have Russell Westbrook and Blake Griffin, I would assume attendance would skyrocket.
Yeah, your ticket sales would definitely go up. Westbrook has a major flash and pop. You know, he might not be the same player he was when he won MVP, but he still has that name Westbrook and would definitely help them sell tickets. So I'm not a huge fan of it from the Pistons side, but I could see why they would do it. Thunder, I think it's a more beneficial trade.
Yeah.
Now on to the Miami Heat, probably the most talked about team when it comes to Russell Westbrook. The Heat would get Russell Westbrook, Patrick Patterson. The Thunder would get Goran Dragic, Justice Winslow, Kelly Olynyk, a 2025 first-round pick, top 10 protected, unprotected in 2026.
I mean, if you're the Thunder in this situation, you really want to be high on Justice Winslow, I guess.
Yeah.
But also in this trade, you're more so just off – you're benefiting from the fact you're getting Westbrook off the books. And with Dragic, Winslow, Olynyk, the draft picks obviously is a bonus, but at least you get some sort of competitive roster, and maybe you can even flip Dragic later on in the year if you wanted to, around the deadline after he is available to be traded again. So I don't hate this move. I mean, I think this trade makes more sense for the Heat. They're already trying to move Dragic. You're trying to get rid of Kelly Olynyk. You get Westbrook. It makes you more competitive. But as we mentioned, or we've been mentioning, what's the point of being a mid-level team in the East? I mean, that's what you get if you get Westbrook with Jimmy Butler. You're just middle of the pack. Maybe you can get into it the second round a few times, but you're pretty much capped up for 3-4 years, and your upside is a second-round exit at best.
Yeah, and I think next year the Heat, if they were not to trade for Westbrook, would be having cap space into the potential to sign a guy, and then the following year even more cap space. So, and I really like what Winslow's done in Miami the last few seasons. Last year he really stepped up, even probably top five and most improved. So I think from the Thunder side, it's a great trade. Like you mentioned, you could flip Dragic possibly for a pick in the middle of the year. Winslow actually gives you a building block moving forward. And then a 2025 first round pick, top 10 protected. You could probably still get that and it'd still be a decent pick. And if not, it's unprotected in 2026. So I think from the Thunder side, this is great. I'm just not a big fan of the Heat picking up Russell Westbrook with the possibility of cap space in the future. And I don't necessarily think from a basketball standpoint that Westbrook and Butler are a great fit. I think off the court, people are like, oh, they're going to fight a lot. I actually think they could get along because they're both like crazy competitive. But on the court, I don't think it's a great fit.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think competitively and with how much tenacity they play with, it's almost like an ideal pairing because they're never going to have to question each other on if they want it enough.
Yeah, they're both crazy.
Right. But then in the fourth quarter, that's when things could get dicey because, you know, Westbrook takes a long three and Butler's like, yo, bro, like, nah. Like, I mean, but yeah, that it's just an interesting fit.
Yeah, I don't know if there's an amazing fit out there for Russell Westbrook right now. Getting on to the next team, you could argue this might be the best fit.
I think it is, Nick.
Yeah, and that's the Timberwolves. Russell Westbrook and Andre Roberson to the T-Wolves. The Thunder would get Andrew Wiggins, Jeff Teague, Josh Okogie. So I think this is a potential trade that works out for both sides.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. And I know people see Wiggins' name, they're like, oh, no. But if you're the Thunder, you're going to be losing out on Paul George and Russell Westbrook, likely trading Adams as well. Wiggins is locked up. He still has some potential. It's not great potential. The value is at its all-time lowest right now with how he's played after last season getting that big money. But you would still have him for 4 years. Josh Okogie,
Josh Okogie.
Okogie. Oh, man, that's a tough name.
Okogie. You got it. Yeah.
I think he's solid. I like his versatility. Obviously played tremendous defense last year, even on Westbrook. Kind of shows some flashes that he can be a top-notch defender. What will the offense be? And then Jeff Teague's expiring, which is what you would like to see for the Thunder. And then on the flip side, if you're the Timberwolves, I mentioned this at the halfway point in the year when we had one of our trade deadline pods. It's getting near the time frame where if the Timberwolves don't start making moves, we're going to see Karl-Anthony Towns as the next superstar, probably trying to force his way out of Minnesota. So if you get Westbrook, it at least shows Towns that you're trying to win, and you're trying to bring in big stars to accompany him. And Westbrook and his game probably go together decently well. I mean,
yeah,
Westbrook
I think they fit really well.
Yeah, it's him going down court, being pushing the pace with, and having a dynamic center at Karl Anthony Towns in the paint, the guy who can do a little bit of everything. It's almost ideal for Westbrook to have that kind of big man.
Yeah, it's a stretch five. We kind of talked about how Westbrook was on the Bucks. He'd probably be a little bit better because of the spacing. You know, Towns is one of the best stretch fives in the league. You know, it's not that he can only shoot threes, but he can go inside and go outside. And I think that would give Westbrook the space. And we know the T-Wolves aren't going to attract any big free agents. So this is a move to kind of make them more relevant. And like you said, make Karl Anthony Towns happy and possibly push him into the playoffs and the Thunder. Andrew Wiggins, there is still probably a slight chance he could be a good player. There's a slight chance. It's not a big chance, probably under 10%. But hey, you're going to take a shot on that. And Josh Okogie's kind of a sure thing. You know he's a good player moving forward. And Jeff Teague is what it is. You know, it's a player you have on the roster. He's solid. He's not anything crazy.
Yeah.
Now, Chicago Bulls. The Bulls would get Westbrook. The Thunder would get Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, Felicio, a 2020 first-round pick, lottery protected, top 10 protected in 2021, and then unprotected in 2022.
I mean, if this is a Thunder lopsided trade for me. I mean, it makes sense for the Thunder. LaVine's young. Chris Dunn's young. You're getting draft picks. Feliciano is whatever. His money kind of sucks. But you're getting these young guys, and then you're building around those two guys going forward. So I don't hate it for the Thunder side of this. You're getting off the Westbrook money. If you're Chicago, why? I mean, why would you? I know they need a point guard, but getting Russell Westbrook with the time frame of Markkanen and Otto Porter Jr., Wendell Carter, I don't necessarily understand the fit from a time situation, but I guess it wouldn't be terrible with how they likely are going to be one of the best scoring teams in the league. I mean, they have a lot of offense in Chicago.
Yeah, I think if they wanted to be relevant and make a push for the playoffs, they pull the trigger on this. But like you said, in terms of timeline, it doesn't necessarily match up. And I'm not really sure if I would do this. Maybe if I'm the Bulls, I would probably want to remove that first-round pick and then just trade Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and Felicio.
Yeah. I mean, I know the rumor came out a week ago or so, or a couple weeks ago, they're looking to shop Chris Dunn. So it's possible we even see him on the move outside of this deal.
Yeah, I think, like we kind of mentioned, I think the Timberwolves one is probably the best trade out there.
Yeah, I would agree.
Maybe not that exact one, but something along those lines. I think that's where you could actually see a fit kind of work out. But moving on from there, you know, Westbrook talk, I think, is going to carry on for a couple weeks. I don't think we'll see a trade right away, but it is what it is. Marcus Morris. Recently, the Knicks had this situation with Reggie Bullock where they wanted to rework his deal, so they had more cap space. So they offered Marcus Morris a one-year, $50 million contract after he already verbally agreed to sign with the Spurs for 2 years and $20 million. Thoughts on this?
It's a bad look for Marcus Morris and his agent. It's a bad look for the Knicks. I mean, this has obviously not to the same degree, but it has shades of DeAndre Jordan from a couple years ago when he told the Mavericks he was going to be coming. And then, obviously, he was held hostage by Blake Griffin and the Clippers, and they talked some sense into him, and he came back to Los Angeles. But
you could argue it's worse.
Right, and it's worse because the Spurs made a trade to get enough cap space and roster space to get Marcus Morris. Bertans was one of the best three-point shooters in the league last year, and I'm guessing that if you're the Spurs, you probably wouldn't want to lose that guy if you're not going to get Marcus Morris. And that's really what it comes down to. I know Marcus Morris – for him, it makes a lot of sense because the deal I saw possibly reported would be he would get a one-year deal for $15 million with the Knicks, and then they would put him in the free agency next offseason where there is not a very big free agency class because apparently Marcus Morris expected himself to get some big-time money this offseason, and the market just dried up really fast.
Yeah, I mean, from a money perspective, it's hard to, like, blame Marcus Morris, but he did verbally agree. And I understand. I think it almost looks worse for the Knicks because, like, hey, you knew the Spurs already verbally agreed to this guy, and now you're trying to, like, poach him away after one of your deals kind of went through because maybe you didn't do the proper background physical exam on the player. So I'm not a huge fan of this. I think if you verbally agree, you should probably be forced to commit to that, or the NBA should probably, like, find the player or find the team, you know, trying to steal a player away from somebody else.
Is there a way to form a rule or a, like, what is, how do you prevent this? I guess is the question I'm trying to figure out. Like, is there a way to prevent this? Like, what is, or is there a way to penalize somebody for doing this?
I think they would have to kind of look into it moving forward, because I think it's just something you don't want if a team is verbally agreed, especially since like one of the main reasons I would assume it hasn't become official is because the Spurs are waiting for the Bertans trade to go through officially so that they would have the cap space to sign this move. You know, a lot of like cap gymnastics is really happening during a lot of these signings where they agree to the deal. Now the team has to figure out some things, how they can rework some contracts or trade some guys to kind of make these signings happen. So I think the NBA would probably look into it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Talking about that, another a little player movement, nothing crazy. You know, it's kind of on the OKC front. Jeremy Grant was traded from OKC to Denver for a first-round pick. Thoughts on this and what he brings to the Nuggets?
I mean, this is a big-picture move for the Denver Nuggets. Gave up nothing for him. Jeremy Grant has gotten better and better these last couple of years, really became a 3-and-D guy, has great length, really just a top-notch defender at the small ball four. But not even small ball, because he's got so much length to him. And this is a move for the Nuggets where you're probably not looking for a ton from Jeremy Grant this year. Obviously, you want him to be a crucial element to your roster, but you still have Paul Millsap. Millsap will be a free agent next offseason, coming off the books, and maybe he comes back for a cheaper deal, Millsap. If not, then you have Jeremy Grant and Michael Porter Jr. for your small ball four. So I think for the Nuggets, it was a really nice move just to win now and bigger picture.
Yeah, it's like they kind of protected themselves moving forward if they don't end up finding a four of the future, or maybe Michael Porter can't stay healthy, knock on wood. I mean, it's not really a lot to give up, just a first-round pick that's going to probably be, you know, in the late 20s. You got to give him props for a move like that. And I think it'll give him a nice boost and give him some nice physicality and some athleticism and just another guy that Jokic could hit on an easy dunk to the rim or hit somebody in transition.
And honestly, Jeremy Grant had a nice boost from three-point percentage last year with not very many weapons around him. So I wonder what he looks like in this Denver Nuggets offense where he's surrounded by a lot of shooters.
Yeah, I mean, next year he has a player option for $9.6 million, so there's no guarantee they are able to retain him, but you know, there's a possibility they get him on a longer deal or something like that. So it's interesting. I am curious about his three-point shooting because he did shoot really well last year. I'm pretty sure it dropped off in the playoffs. It'll be interesting if he can kind of keep this up this upcoming season.
Definitely.
Now, just a little bit on the rule side of the NBA, they announced they will now have a challenge rule. What were your thoughts on this?
I mean, we're seeing this across all major league sports. Baseball has it, the NFL has it, and now the NBA is the latest to join in. I mean, there's a couple of plays from last year that stick out. You know, Kevin Durant saving the ball, he was clearly out of bounds. Like, that's like the first one that pops up. Kawhi traveling in the playoffs at midcourt. You know, some of these moments that have slight impacts on the game, now coaches will have the ability to challenge, you know, to see if they can reverse an inbound call, reverse a mistake. But at the same time, I don't love it. I mean, replays do slow down the game. But I understand we have all this technology at our disposal. If we can try and make these games more accurate, if there are calls missed, then I don't think we should get away from that.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting kind of see how it plays out and how it impacts the time. I think the most important thing will be like having Secaucus, New Jersey, having a big impact on this so it can be quick and not necessarily the refs in the arena. So there's just a lot of eyes on it and it can happen in a quick minute instead of it being like, okay, let's draw this out for a couple minutes and things are going to change. From what I understand, it won't impact the last 2 minutes. That'll still be based on the refs to initiate that. So it's just more so the rest of the game. I think it's something that's positive. At least the NBA is willing to make a change. We won't really know how it works until we see it on the court.
I agree. I wonder, did they say how many you get a game?
One.
I don't hate that, actually. One isn't bad because you know you're not going to use that until late in the game.
And it's just like the NFL, I believe. So if you challenge and you don't get it, you lose a timeout.
Which, I mean, that could have dire situations in a late game situation.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter, definitely big. Or even just, I think timeouts are underrated by NBA head coaches, and I don't want to go on a rant right now. But how you place your timeouts during runs or resting certain players, I think, are really crucial. Some coaches do it excellent, and other coaches don't do it well at all. But let's get into a little fact or fiction, Corey. You know, there's been some hot takes out there. We're going to start with a hot take from a player. This is Mike Conley. He says the Jazz will be title contenders this year.
Fact.
What do you think? Where would you rank them in terms of contention in the West?
I would probably have them third right now.
I think that's fair.
I had the Lakers and Clippers above them, just off star talent. But then if I'm looking at the other teams, I like what the Jazz have slightly more than the Nuggets and Rockets.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd go with fact as well. I think the only reason you put the Clippers and Lakers, not only because of the star power, but also the experience.
Yeah.
You know, LeBron and Kawhi are guys that have won championships. From just right off the top of my head, I don't think anybody on Utah has won a championship or even been in the NBA Finals. So,
nope.
Actually, wait, they signed Jeff Green?
They did. Yeah, so they have final him. And I mean, they have some deep playoff experience in Mike Conley, of course, but you know, definitely nothing to write home about.
Yeah, nothing too crazy. All right, another one for you. Jackson Hayes had the best summer league dunk ever. You saw it, right?
Yeah, I mean, he need him in the mouth. I would say, yeah, I would say yes. With the runner up being that steal and dunk from Zion night one. But yeah, this was definitely a big time dunk. You know what's funny about this? I thought about this. When I play pickup games, when I drive to the rim, I get up kind of high, and my knee at times has hit people in the chest. Everyone's always like, charge. If this man can knee someone in the face and not get a charge call, then I don't charge in pickup games. I want that.
You need to finish with a dunk, and they won't call a charge.
Yeah, that's what it is. I got to get a little bit extra high.
That's what you got to do. I agree. I mean, that play was sick. I mean, you could argue the Pelicans have the two top plays of summer league. You mentioned the Zion play. I think that dunk wasn't as crazy, but the fact he just manhandled Kevin Knox like he was a child was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was the combination of the steal and finish.
And it was also like the first summer league game for him, and it was just like a ton of hype in that situation. All right, another one though. The Bucks will be better this season than they were last season.
Oh, man. See, this is a tricky question because on paper, the roster didn't really get that much better. If anything, it maybe got worse. But this question kind of hinders on the fact if you think Antetokounmpo gets better. So I'm going to say fact. I'm going to say they get better because Antetokounmpo has been showing glimpses of a jump shot coming. And maybe this is the year the jump shot comes. And maybe Middleton gets a little bit better. So I'll say fact.
I don't know why. I'm just going to go with fiction here. I think, you know, they lost your boy Malcolm Brogdon now. And I just think, like, obviously we missed most of last season, but I just think a lot of things went really right for them last year. And it's kind of hard to have a consistent season like they did last year and carry it over. I think Giannis will get better, but I think the other guys maybe could get worse or just little things could happen where they're just not as successful as last year. And they also caught a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, saying they're a better team, does that mean they get more than 60 wins?
Yeah, I would say they'd be the number one seed again.
Okay. Yeah, I would have them still as my favorite to win the East, so that's fine.
All right, the Hornets are in the worst position in the league.
Oh, my God. Fact.
Sorry, Dylan.
fact on fact, yes. I mean, the money locked up in some of these guys. I know Biombo comes off and Marvin Williams comes off and MKG come off, but now you locked up Terry Rozier as your starting point guard. You had Mitch Kupchak come out and say that they believe Terry Rozier would be a high lottery pick if he was in this year's past draft, like, which is such a weird thing to say. This is a bad situation. I mean, who wants to go to Charlotte and your team is just extremely mediocre across the board?
And, like, even though they're opening up cap spaces, like you said, no one's really going to want to go there. And MJ just hasn't done a great job running the organization. Mitch Kupchak, I think, is a terrible GM. Like, he's done terrible things, obviously.
Solidified it, I think, with Charlotte.
Yeah, like he signed Timothy Mozgov and Luol Deng and set the Lakers back. Like, I would not be confident with him in my front office. On to the next one. Kevin Durant will play basketball in 2019-2020. Well, actually 2020, obviously. I'm just saying this season. So 2020.
I'm going to say fact.
That's what I like to hear.
But I'm only saying fact because I think as a competitor, Durant will want to play. I'm not so sure the Brooklyn Nets will allow him to play. But I think if they're in a position where they feel like he can come back, and even if he's not at like 100%, that he can contribute to a playoff run, then I think we do see him. But I think he wants to play this year because he's a competitor. I mean, he wanted to play last year in the finals, and we saw what happened. But I don't know if the Brooklyn Nets are going to be I feel like they're going to be reluctant to have him come in coming off that injury.
Yeah, they're already conservative. Obviously, they just signed KD to a max year, a deal, 3+1, and they want him fully healthy. So I think it would have to be him feeling good. And I said this on the Buzz, like, he would probably need to be good by the end of March so he could get some regular season time to prepare him for the postseason. I don't think you want to put a player like KD right into the postseason. I mean, you probably could, but there's a possibility of him getting re-injured like we just saw with Golden State. So I'm going to say fact. I think it's actually going to happen. I just have a weird feeling. Yesterday I said 20%, but then all the talk about it. And then just Kevin Durant himself is obsessed with basketball, and I just feel like that makes it more likely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest element of this, which is why I said fact, too. I think Durant's going to just want to play. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. This is a guy who, if he can't play basketball, wants to play.
Yeah. Now, last one. Anthony Davis will be the best player in L.A. by the end of the season.
Oof. I'll say fact, and ooh, I'll say fact because I think the load management for Kawhi – could play a factor in the fact that Anthony Davis may just get more games played. He may be utilized as the number one option for that team with LeBron James playing a facilitator role. So I'll say fact in Anthony Davis being the best player in LA. But I think come playoff time, it all changes when Kawhi is let loose.
Early hot take, AD your favorite for MVP next year?
Oh man, I don't even know who I would say would be the MVP. I guess. I mean, if the Lakers want to be as good as they're supposed to be, Anthony Davis has to be the best player on that team, I think, right? So yeah, that would have to be an MVP like season. I think LeBron's still going to get those, you know, 27, 8, and 8 stat lines.
Yeah, I probably still have Giannis as my favorite right now, but I think AD would maybe be my favorite in the West.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And also, like, I kind of think, like, depending on, I mean, the Westbrook train has really dumbed down, but I feel like there is a situation where he has a ridiculous year next year with that FU mentality because everyone keeps leaving him. But again, that's like, what, a 7 seed, 6 seed, whatever.
Yeah, even if that is the case, like, I don't know, like, I think Westbrook kind of lost some of his hype because NBA fans and media have become so analytically driven that, like, okay, now Westbrook and his triple-doubles aren't as big a deal because he's so inefficient.
Yeah, and we've also seen it already now, right? Yeah. Like, it's different when it was the first time seeing him get all these triple-doubles. We're like, whoa, like, no one's ever done this. And now he does it all the time, and everyone else does it all the time. It's just like, oh, triple-doubles, like, no big deal. Where the quadruple-doubles at?
Yeah, it's like, all right, do something different. Why don't you shoot 40% from three? But on that note, I think we are good. Corey, anything else you want to throw out there?
No, just check out otgbasketball.com for the latest and greatest up and coming content out there.
Yes, we got articles dropping, new podcasts coming out, and everything. Corey has Full Access Hoop. I have Brooklyn Buzz as well. Be sure to check that out. iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, otgbasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out.